yeah, grab your Bible and your handout and your pen. We're going to get to work. In case the Red Bull video didn't make sense, that guy skydived from 125,000 feet. It's the highest someone's ever been skydiving. Tyler, how far did you jump from? 13,000. Yeah. So that's like, I mean, when you got to wear a spacesuit to skydive, you know you made it. And then the other side of it was he broke the sound barrier while skydiving. And so the whole sonic boom that happens with a plane, that happened with a person. Legit. Okay, so go to Ecclesiastes 2. That's where we're going to be at tonight. We're reading verses 1 to 11. I'll just hit on the two power announcements for the night. First, be sure to get into one of our Connect groups this Sunday. Stacy and Crystal were both kind of communicating to you. Use them as your point of reference. So if you're underclassmen, see Stacy. If you're upperclassmen, see Crystal. Be sure to join them at their house this Sunday. The other one is that our fall retreat's coming up. We didn't go to summer camp because there was a fire. And so we modified our year. And so fall retreat's coming up. $50 a person. If you bring someone who doesn't attend, our church will charge them $30 and you $30. All right, so it's a good deal. Bring somebody. If you haven't been here over the last couple of weeks, here's what Ecclesiastes is. It's a book written by Solomon. He's king over Israel. It's written about 3,000 years ago. Solomon's old, looks back on his life and says, if I could tell you some things about how I lived, here's what I'd say. Ecclesiastes is going to take a really hard, aggressive look at life. It starts tonight. Here we go. And then this is designed to give us happiness and designed to make us wise because Solomon's going to take all the things that we know about living and is going to say, let me show you some stuff. Now, you may disagree with the Bible tonight, and I'm okay if you do. You may not agree with everything that's in there. That's fine. One of the things we hold to here is 2 Timothy 3, that all scripture is breathed out by God and it's profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, equipped in every good work. All right, so we hold all the scriptures that way. When we look at Ecclesiastes, there's not a person who can argue with what Solomon comes up with in Ecclesiastes. So even if you don't believe the scriptures, you're going to see in Ecclesiastes that what he says is true. And then we're going to take the gospel and we're going to start to use that as a lens to look at Ecclesiastes. All right, so let's read verses 1 to 11, and then we'll kind of work out some stuff there. All right, so chapter 2, verses 1 to 11, again, page 470. And we'll get to work. So here's Solomon. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of a man to do under heaven during the days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted them in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than anyone who had ever been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was the reward for my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and all that the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So we've got something at the bottom of your handout. It's called a bottom line. And if you get nothing else from our little talk tonight, we want you to get this one point. And it's an equation, and it says no price and no penalty equals no pleasure. No price plus no penalty equals no pleasure. All right? No price plus no penalty equals no pleasure. Now, this is going to be the first of experiments that Solomon's going to conduct on life. And so he's just going to put life against itself and is going to say, all right, let's see how this holds up as it relates to meaning, value, and purpose in life. And so there's four categories. We're going to go through four topics. There's indulgence, and we'll kind of unpack that. There's achievement, there's possessions, and then there's fame. And so as we start getting into Solomon's test, we've got a question at the top that I think is great for us to frame all of this for you, and that's, what would you test if you could test anything in life? If you knew that there was no price, no penalty, no consequences, what would you say, all right, I'm going to see if this thing is what they say that it is? Because you'll get people who will say, hey, try this. And I'm not just talking about drugs, but you say, try any of these things, and that's going to give value, meaning, and purpose to you. And if you had the opportunity to test it with no consequences and you'd have no price to pay for it, what would you test? For me, it's a Ferrari. Okay, so here's Ecclesiastes 2:1-3. He says this. Now, I said in my heart, come now, I'll test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself, but behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it's mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. And so Solomon starts to test indulgence, and indulgences are those things that you give to yourself that bring you pleasure. And so here were the four indulgences he tested. The first was laughter. Now, everybody knows there have been points where you've laughed so hard that you've cried. That I cannot stop myself from laughing funny ha-ha, right? And so that's the point at which he hired the best comedians in the world and said, come make me laugh. So I don't know who you think is funny. I don't know who you find to be entertaining when it comes to humor. I find ghetto humor to be the most entertaining. That's just due to my background, but I find ghetto humor is the best. So I usually go the greatest, and there's a reason why they're called the kings, but the kings of comedy are the best comedians that have ever lived in all of the world. So that's there. And then you've got, I mean, Kevin Hart is vulgar, but the dude is funny. He's got little man syndrome, and we all just laugh because he's trying to compensate for that. And then you've got the dude who's from Parks and Rec, who Stacy and Brady love, specifically Stacy, loves the heck out of that dude. And so there's, find your funny and then say, if you could just sit down and laugh, would that give you value and meaning? And so Solomon said, I'm going to laugh until I vomit. And that's what he got to. And so he tested laughter. He then went on to pleasure and just name what pleases, and he tried it. So anything that brought pleasure, he said, I'm trying it. And one of the things that kind of falls out of that is wine. And so Solomon drank a lot of wine. There are a lot of people who like wine, who like to find grapes, who like to spin it around in a glass, who like to waft it up to themselves, who like to drink it, swish it, you know, have it with cheeses that come from France. There's all kinds of things that go with wine. You don't find that with any other alcohol in the world, right? Like nobody's saying an Oktoberfest, you know what I need to grab? Some nice meats and cheeses to go with it. People drink beer by itself, and what accompanies beer is meats. It's really meats and beer is all it is. Hot dogs, beer. Pizza, beer. Bratwurst, beer. I mean, that just is what it is. But with wine, there's something very elegant about drinking wine. And so Solomon didn't go get the box variety. He got the really dope wine and said, I'm just going to drink wine because people say it's awesome. So he drank a lot of wine. And you need to know he drank a lot of wine. All right, this isn't some like casual sipping. Okay, and it's not like Solomon had Welch's grape juice that had a little bit of a sting with it. He had for real wine and drank a lot of wine. And then folly is sheer stupidity. All right, so what Solomon did is he got the Johnny Knoxvilles of his time and said, boys, let's go blow some stuff up. All right, he got some redneck dudes from Arkansas who had nothing better to do and just said, let's celebrate America by blowing a piece of it up. All right, and so that was his indulgence, right? Because there are times when stupidity is entertaining and we just love it. I saw a video of a German guy who tried to do a cannonball into a frozen pool. Now, you don't choose to do that if you didn't first test it with wine. So my man had a little bit too much something going on, and so he got down into his skivvies and had his friend, and I don't know all the German that went into it. The only thing that I know is Ich habe kein Geld, which means I have no money. That's the only German I know. And so I saw him there, and so he started saying all this stuff, and then he just ran off of the roof and did a cannonball. It did not break. The water broke the dude, and so he was just like, pool, and then went straight out, and then his friend could not stop from shaking because the guy was there. Now, we love fail videos, right? Because we love seeing somebody be folly. And so that's why epic fails are so great. Because when you see it, you just go, ooh, and they were all doing the same. Okay, so he puts those to the test. Let's read verses 4-6. He said, as I made great works, I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and, oh, did we go to six? Okay, stop at six. All right, so now he goes at achievement. All right, so he says, all right, if those things and pleasure and indulgence didn't get me there, let's try doing some stuff that people look at. All right, so he started building houses. One of his houses took 13 years to build. He built a house for every one of his wives, which we're going to get to here in a little bit. He made vineyards, which vineyards are what grows wine. And so instead of going to some guy in Napa Valley for wine, he said, I'm just going to start growing Solomon's wine. And so just made tons of vineyards. He planted gardens and parks. And so what we know is like Yellowstone or Yosemite, Solomon's like, I'm going to make one. And just went out and built a grand national monument. And then all of these things require a lot to get them going. And so in order to water all of that, he made gigantic pools and an irrigation system to water all of the stuff that he was building. Now that is bomb. Like if you could just build something that people would go, dang. Right, like that guy jumped out of a Hubble telescope or a capsule. So he floated Apollo 13 up and jumped out of it, right? That's cool, but no one's going to be able to look and see the Red Bull Stratos somewhere, right? But if he built the Washington Monument, people come and visit that. If you build the Eiffel Tower, people come and visit that. And so we're going to see in a little bit, Solomon was building so much stuff that people were coming to visit him from around the world. All right, verses 7-8 say this. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So now here's what he did. He got male and female slaves, and it's really like servants. So like he had a bunch of butlers, all right? So don't, and I don't know what a salves is, but it's not a slave. But it's male and female servants, right? So Solomon didn't do anything. Solomon didn't mess with anything. He didn't touch anything. He didn't eat his own food if he didn't want to. All right, so he had dudes who just did every aspect of life that he wanted done, and they brought it there. He got great amounts of herds and flocks, which is just our way of saying a lot of wealth and possessions, right? So where we would go buy a car, that didn't happen in the ancient world, so they just got big old herds. So some guy would be like, oh yeah, you've got 1,000? Check out my 10,000. And then guys would go, dang, man, you got the 10,000? That is legit. And then go, wait till you see the goats. And then the goats would come over the hill. And then that was the way that we would say, like, oh, look at my TV. Herds and flocks were the big deal. He amassed silver, gold, and treasure of kingdoms. The Bible records that he got 50,000 pounds of gold in 1 year. That is a butt ton of gold, all right? 50,000 pounds of gold in 1 year. Right, like if you and I got that much gold in 1 year, we're set. You don't need to do anything for the rest of your life. Solomon got that in 1 year, and that's just the gold. And so there he goes. Male and female singers. And so Solomon didn't have people come in to sing for him occasionally. So like he didn't go to a Mute Math concert. He didn't go to a Coldplay concert or a U2 concert. He bought U2 and said, sing until I'm done with you. Right, so that's the equivalent of male and female singers. He didn't go to shows and concerts. He bought bands. And so I don't know who you would buy if you could buy, but if you could buy a band, living or dead, and bring them to your house, Solomon did that and said, just play for me. Walk with me as we go. So he was like, Coldplay, you put on a good show. Come to my house. I own you. And he's like, oh, you too. I heard you're a good show. Come to my house. Muse, you're a great show. Come to my house. And so I don't know what your music is, but he said, you're coming to my house to play. And then he got many concubines. Now, this is what Solomon is notorious historically for. Concubines are a Bible word that means women for the purpose of sexual pleasure. And so what it says of Solomon is that he got 700 wives, all of whom were princesses, and then he got 300 concubines who their sole purpose was sexual pleasure. And the reason he said it is it's the delight of the son of man. Now, why would Solomon test that? Because sex is one of the things throughout all of history that's been held in super high regard. And so Solomon said, I think 1,000 women is a good understanding to see, is sex what they say it is? And so Solomon just had thousands of women. Now you need to know, in all of this, God's not looking at it going, good job, Solomon. 300 women, huh? Good job, buddy. 700 wives, that's what I thought of in the beginning. This is one of Solomon's wicked times. And so when we get to the end, Solomon is looking back on all of this and saying, learn from my stupidity, all right? And so here's where the concubines come in. Now, in all of those possessions, there was a foreign dignitary who came. Her name was the Queen of Sheba. It says in 1 Kings 10 that when the Queen of Sheba had come and seen all of the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food of his table, the seating of his officials, and the attendance of his servants, their clothing, his cupbearers, and his burnt offerings that he offered at the house of the Lord, there was no breath in her. So what does that mean? She was speechless. She went to Solomon's house and just went, I don't even know what to say. Now, if leaders of the world are coming to your house and they just go, man, I don't even know, like, where do I start? That's kind of the rep that Solomon had going into it. Now, here's what Solomon says of himself, verses 9 and 10. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was the reward for all my toil. And so what Solomon says is, in my time, I beat everyone. There was not anybody in my time who could touch me. And then he says, for us, we can't keep up with Solomon. Like, you can't do what he did in the context with which he did it. You'll never have the power, the money, the opportunity, the access. You won't get there. And so Solomon says, before all of that, I beat it all. And then what we've said every week, what we're going to continue to say, is our press against that is, I bet Solomon didn't go hard. Like, I bet Solomon left a little bit on the table. Like, I'm sure he didn't really take it to the fullest extent. And what Solomon says in verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure. And so he said, everything I wanted, I got it. So when Solomon drank, he drank the best wine in the world. When Solomon built, he built a wonder of the world. Like, no one's building one of those again. Like the Eiffel Tower's awesome. It's not a wonder of the world. But when Solomon built, everybody historically is like, it's one of the greatest things ever constructed in all of history. When Solomon partied, he partied harder than anyone would party. When he got possessions, he got more than anybody else. World leaders envied Solomon. His slaves had better clothes than you and I do. Like, his servants were swagged out, and you and I can't even touch that, right? Like, we buy it, and that's cool. Solomon's servants were decked. So the Queen of Sheba comes and goes, man, I see the way your servants are dressed and I'm embarrassed. Like, your butler's got better gear than I do. And so Solomon went way harder, way stronger, way faster, more Daft Punk than you'll ever have. And he said from there, all of that was his reward, that reward was there. Now, as we get to verse 10, we want to read verse 11 because verse 11 kind of frames all of that. So let's throw verse 11 up there and we'll read it. And it says this, then I considered all that my hands had done and all the toil I'd expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. And so the next blank we've got for you is this. We are far too easily pleased. We're far too easily pleased. We are far too easily pleased. And so Solomon looks at all of that and says, it's vanity. And vanity means meaningless. It means breath. And so what Solomon says is the pursuit of those things was like running after the wind. You can't catch the wind. You look like a dummy if you try to chase wind. If that's the way you spend yourself, you're going to look like a fool trying to catch wind. And so you'll never have enough. You'll never get to the end. It'll never cure. You'll always end up feeling empty. And we're going to come back to this consistently because this helps us to understand, does it really satisfy? And so ask Steve Jobs before he died, did he ever build enough? And he'd say no, because every time Steve Jobs advertised a product, it was brilliant, it was masterful, it was wonderful, it was awe-striking. It's the greatest thing Apple had ever invented. Their team worked harder than they ever worked before. Blah, 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 blah. And we all go, I gotta buy that thing. He never built enough. Was Marilyn Monroe beautiful enough? No, she's one of the most beautiful women in all of history. And was she beautiful enough? No. Was Sam Walton rich enough? His kids are ranked amongst the top 10 in wealth after they divided his wealth amongst themselves. Dang. Like, Sam Walton had twice the money Bill Gates has right now. Dang. Like, what do you do with $100 billion? So was he rich enough? No. Did Julius Caesar possess enough? If you ever watch Gladiator, he comes to the end and he says, well, you've conquered the whole world. And what does he say? There's always more places to conquer. Because you never get to the, like, you can never have enough there. And was Michael Jackson popular enough? He is the king of popular. No one's touching Mike, right? There's not a person in the world, One Direction, who's going to get anywhere close to Michael Jackson, ever. And he still wasn't popular enough. Like, all of those things still disturb the soul. And we could go all night about stories of people who grabbed a hold of everything they ever dreamed of and felt empty. That they had the world and they took their own life. And we could see that. I mean, we could just point out examples. You know and I know. Heath Ledger. Had the world, was on the cusp of being at the pinnacle of his career. Done. Kurt Cobain. Had it all. Done. And why? Because they achieved everything they ever dreamed of. And that dream still wasn't enough. C.S. Lewis says in The Way to Glory, one of my favorite books, he says, we're half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at sea. We're far too easily pleased. And so I want to frame all of this because I think if you aren't careful, you're going to start to hear me talking about those things and get it confused. And so the next point we've got for you that helps is that the stuff isn't the issue. That the stuff isn't the issue. So when we talk about indulgence, achievement, possessions, and fame, they on themselves are not the problem. Like, to enjoy life, God's not up in heaven going, unbelievable. You like music? You got some nerve. Like, you laughed till you vomited? Unbelievable. Stop smiling. Life's not, it's not the stuff. But when your pursuit becomes the thing and life terminates on the thing, then that becomes an issue. Because all of those things are just painting pictures. So possessions and indulgence and achievement and fame and all of those are just little windows that we're supposed to be able to say, okay, this is coming as a gift. So when you get pleasure, God created it. Like, God made every sense that causes us to be able to say that thing is enjoyable. But when we end ourselves on whether or not we're pleased with it, then that thing terminates on itself and you'll never find something that will please you enough to sustain you for the rest of your life. When we come about achievement is our opportunity to say God has created us to be stewards of the earth and we can build things and to be able to achieve and have monuments. I mean, God is glorified in that. But if your end is achievement, you'll never achieve enough. And you see people who busy themselves with activity trying to achieve more because they feel like at some point their achievement will cause them rest. That you could say that about possessions. You've never met a person who's satisfied with their possessions except people who don't have possessions. Who are the most satisfied people in the earth? The poor. But then once you start getting out of that, it's all about more and more and more. So you have so much, what do? You buy a $1 billion car. You buy a $1 billion plane. You buy a $1 billion boat. You buy a $1 billion house. You just start spending billions. And then what? You still can't amass enough possessions to go, huh, I've made it. And then what about fame? You'll never be known in the whole world. And so because that's true, you're always going to press to have more fame. And so if the end becomes fame and notoriety, you'll never get there. And so Solomon says, man, the issue is not the stuff. The issue comes on if your pursuit is that thing by itself. That's vanity, and it won't give you meaning. It's meaningless. So we'll again share another quote from C.S. Lewis. He says, if a transtemporal, transfinite, which means just it's only here for a little bit and it doesn't have the ability to go on for eternity, good is our real destiny, then any other good on which our desire fixes must be in some degree fallacious, meaning it's not correct, must bear at best only a symbolic relation to what will truly satisfy. So that which we fix our lives on, it's nature's way of intending us to push ourselves towards God. That all of these things are great gifts. And so we celebrate the gifts and then we return the celebration to the giver. Now, if we celebrate the gift and deny the giver, then we're terminating on its own. So like when you eat steak, God made steak flavors. Like when he was conjuring up the universe, he's like, someday people are going to start to cut apart cows. And some guy's going to have the great idea to put it on fire. And then that thing is going to cook itself. And the best way to eat that is medium rare. And you can serve that along potatoes. And you could serve that with other good starches. And then when you cut into that thing and it's sizzling on the plate, Ruth's Chris style, and you just cut into it and eat it, that flavor God made. Chicken to taste like everything, God made it. Tang, God made it. Like, name a flavor, God's the designer. So when you eat it and you go, oh, God made the flavor. Like, someone didn't go, oh, check this out. God's like, welcome to the party. I know. Like, when someone took an avocado for the first time and smashed it up and put a like little tomatoes and other like jalapeno bits in there, and someone took a tortilla chip with that, God was like, welcome to Mexican food. How long did it take on the avocado? You know, when someone started slicing it up and putting it on BLTs, he's like, welcome to California. All of those, I mean, God is the designer of it. So if we start saying the pursuit is this thing, you're never returning it back to the one who created it. And so, like, even sex is God's idea. He's the builder of it. The devil didn't come in and jack with wiring. Like, one day, God didn't turn his eyes, and then all of a sudden, the devil came in and was like, check this out, you guys. And God was like, no! That's not the way it went. God built it from the beginning. And so everything that comes with it, God's like, yep, my plan. But if we start having that thing by itself and not recognizing that there's one who gave it, made it, sustains it, causes it to be what it is, then we're having a temporal joy. We're just making mud houses when God's like, hey, you want to go on the yacht and take a sail? Nah, man. I'd rather make mud pies. Okay, so now that's the Ecclesiastes lens. Pursue anything on its own and it'll prove meaningless. And you can test that with anything. Test your heart. Pursue that thing to the very extreme of the end. Will it satisfy you for all of your life? The answer will always and definitively be no. So how do we take the gospel lens on it? Let's go to Luke 12. And that's where we'll finish our time together. So Luke 12 is the finishing part. It's on page 744. Now we're going to read verses 13 to 21, and then we'll read the second half of that. So Luke 12, 13 to 21 is how we take what Ecclesiastes says, and then now we're going to put a little Jesus on it. All right, so here we go. Someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, he's talking to Jesus, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. But he said to him, so Jesus said to this dude, man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? And he said to him, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops? And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. So we're going to end with a series of questions. And the first question that we've got for you is, what am I building? What are you building? What are you building? The natural evolution of things is to build more and get more. So you get your first car, you don't plan on driving that your whole life. You buy your first house, it's not going to last forever. So when Rachel and I got married, we rented a house and we bought a house. That house was great while we were married without children. We had children, still great. We're working on child number two. We'll find out what it is on Wednesday and we'll tell you guys. Ah. All right, so we find that out, right? Okay, we're starting to get overran in our house. There's two dogs, two children, and us two. That house is getting real small. So our eyes are on, we're going to have to buy another house, right? And then we're going to have more babies. We're going to have to buy more houses. We're going to adopt a family. We're going to have to buy more houses. I mean, there's just more things that are similar. So you're just going to get more and more and more. And so the natural evolution of things is to get more, store more, save more, have more. And so there comes a day for this guy where he's like, man, I got all I need. I'm just going to kick back and relax. And when Jesus shares this story, we haven't gotten here yet, but everybody hearing it hears Ecclesiastes, because chapter 2, verse 24 says, there's nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment. That's be merry in his toil. And so Solomon's looking at all of this stuff and he says, okay, if life is the way that it is, then you're going to want to enjoy it. We'll tell you why he says that there. And so that eat, drink, and be merry, Ecclesiastes. Now he also goes, verses 18 and 19, Solomon said before that, I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. Solomon says it's vanity. And so that, again, Jesus says, man, who knows what's going to happen when you're gone? Somebody's getting it and it's not going to be you. And so everything you know, when you die, somebody else gets. And it's either going to be gotten by the government, it's going to be gotten by your family, or it's going to be gotten by people who auction off your gear. Now, I know that that's like, oh, thanks again for inviting. But at some point, all that stuff's gone. And who knows who will get it? Like, you could have worked your whole life to buy your dream house. What if you have idiot kids and they burn your house down? Right now, here's like, that's the way to Solomon, because his two idiot children divided the kingdom, had it conquered by foreign armies, and where Solomon had it built to the greatest, his two kids ruined it. Could you imagine if, what's his name, Hilton, handed it over to his daughters? Gee! Right? And that's not a bag on them. They're just not built for hotels. And so if he gave it over to them, that would just have it be a part. And that dude worked his life to build hotels. To have that name Hilton mean something. And so as Jesus starts to say those two things, that who knows when it's going to be called into account and it's going to have to go to somebody, and that to eat, drink, and be merry, that that's the code of life, here's Jesus' response to all that. So again, grab that Bible. We're reading 22 to 34, and this is how we're going to finish, again, with these two questions. And then Tyler's going to rip some worsh, all right? So here's, again, Jesus painted the picture, and then now here's the response. He said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens, they neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouses nor barns, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to the span of his life? If then you are not able to do a small thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried, for all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so the next to last blank we've got for you is, where is your treasure? Where is my treasure? Where is my treasure? And your treasure is the thing that caused you to say, my precious, Gollum. Whatever your treasure is, that's the thing that on that, that's where you put your hopes, your desires, your affection. So what's your treasure? And when you think of what's greatest in your life, that's your treasure. And so, that could be anything. That could be how people view you. Again, it could come down to the step of Solomon, indulgence, achievement, possessions, fame. What is your treasure? And what's that thing that you go, if I lost that, I would die. And so what Jesus says is that if everything else in the planet that does not have supreme value, like a lily, is well taken care of, well clothed, well sought after by God, and it's a lily that may die tomorrow because there was no rain, if a lily's that way, then how much more are you? Like, if that thing's got value, like if grass is grass and grass is going to get mowed, if grass has value in the eyes of God and is taken care of, then how much more value do you have, and what's your treasure? Because all of the things, again, being gifts, if that's true, there's this guy named John Piper, he's a preacher up north. He says this, that God is most glorified in you when you're most satisfied in him. And when that starts to happen, man, when you start to understand, man, like all things are a gift from God. So what becomes a great worship? Man, when I worship God because he makes beautiful women and I get to marry one of them named Rachel, right? Like I can love and just give my life to loving that girl, right? But then it also goes vertically to say, man, Jesus, you make beautiful things. namely Rachel. And that's, man, but to say like, oh, I'm satisfied in Jesus, and look at the great gift that he gives. Like when I have a son, right? And that's a gift. Like my son is a gift. When I have my son and I go, oh God, you make such good gifts, like my son, that you can enjoy everything on the planet and still be able to say it still comes from Jesus, and therefore I can say, man, it's good to eat good food. It's good to be around good friends. It's good to be in love. It's good to laugh. It's good to laugh so hard you vomit. Man, it's good to hear good music and to drive around with friends. Man, all of those things are good, but they're good because they come from Jesus, and I'm so satisfied in him and just love the way that he gives gifts. That's fulfillment. And so our pleasure doesn't end on the gift. Our pleasure ends on the giver. And when I'm satisfied in the giver, he says that he gives me all kinds of gifts. It says that when I set my eyes on the kingdom of God and the things of God and knowing God, that means all other things are going to be added to me. So my life is going to be full of joy, full of contentment, full of pleasure, because I'm given to the one who created all of them. And where people can spend themselves on things that'll never satisfy, that I can spend myself on things that do and always be satisfied. So I know dudes who have Ferraris who hate their life. And I drive a Mazda 3. Check engine light is on. Right? That's my world, right? The thing gets worse gas mileage than our truck. And I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied. I can drive a Ferrari tomorrow and I will rip that thing. But I don't need a Ferrari. I can wear a $40,000 tuxedo and be swag. Or I can wear my $200 suit in my closet and still be swag. I can do whatever. Man, I can find all of that. Because when I'm satisfied in him, that all pleasures then become a result of him. And again, this last quote by C.S. Lewis, and we just beat the ever-living out of it because this is a good book. This last quote is heavy. He says, "And you and I have need of the strongest spell that can be found to wake us from the evil enchantment of worldliness, which is laid upon us for nearly 100 years. Almost all of our world education has been directed to silencing this shy, persistent inner voice. Almost all our modern philosophies have been devised to convince us that the good of man is to be found on this earth. And yet, is it a remarkable thing that such philosophies of progress or creative evolution themselves bear reluctant witness to the truth that our goal is elsewhere?" And the last blank we've got for you tonight is this: what is my response? What is my response? So all of this, and then how are you going to respond? Because where we hold Solomon and say, all right, Solomon's got that. Are you going to trust Solomon? And then when we start to hold the lens of the gospel and Jesus over it, and Jesus is just quoting Solomon, how do you respond to that? Are you going to respond by saying, okay, I'm just going to pursue and pursue and pursue and prove him wrong? Or am I going to say, the wisest man in all of history pursued it and said, it never, ever satisfies? And then to say, man, I'm going to give myself to the one who says, in an instant, I satisfy the very need of your soul. That you know in your heart that you're trying to grab hold of things that you already know there's another step after. That whatever that next thing is, you're trying to grab it. But then once you grab it, there's something else to be grabbed. And there's something else to be grabbed. And there's something else to be grabbed. And there's something else to be grabbed. So you're either going to keep yourself on the treadmill trying to grab after things that you'll never lay hold of, chasing the wind, or you'll say, I'm tired of running, and I'm going to grab hold of the one who says, in himself satisfies and gives me all the things that I would have pursued otherwise. So you can stand to your feet tonight, and we're going to take an opportunity to respond.